two papers today. Essentially, the first one, paper 13A, gives some feedback from the agenda consultation process that we kicked off last July. And the objective is that eventually that we'll take the information that's in this paper and try to wind that into what we call essentially a feedback statement. And that will provide an analysis it will set out for everybody who participated in the review, who we spoke to, how many comments we got, the additional outreach we undertook with investors and so on, and then get a sense of all the comments we got and what the board's response to those comments is. And that's April's going to walk through that paper in the next couple of minutes. Then the second part of the document is that we want to set out what we think the right strategy is for the board in developing its new work program, and that's what paper 13B covers. So if things go well today with these two papers, then we'll basically go away and draw from these and actually put together our proper feedback statement and strategy document from them.
Okay.
Okay, well, thank you, Alan. As Alan said, paper 13A summarises the feedback that we've received on the request for views on the agenda consultation. The paper summarises the sources of that feedback, and then on pages 3 to 15, it records the key messages received for each of the strategic areas in the agenda consultation, as well as messages that we've heard about the standard-setting process itself. And next to each of these is a suggestion of what our response should be to that message. And as Alan said, this content will form the basis for the feedback statement, which is due to be published in the next month or two. Now, we can take any detailed editorial comments you have separately, but as Alan said, what we'd really like you to discuss today is whether you think the paper identifies all the key messages, whether you agree with the suggested responses, and also whether you have any further comments that you'd like to be included in the feedback statement.
What do we think? Well, just one question. I'm just quickly going over this paper again, but when you, I think it's page 3, paragraph 7, you start on messages received and our suggested responses. Where are those responses going to be made?
They'll be made in the feedback statement. So normally when we do a feedback statement, we do give the key messages we received and what the board thought about those messages and what effect that those messages would have on the board.
So I take it you don't want us to go through all those suggested responses today?
No, that's right. I'm more concerned, I think, perhaps with the tone of the responses and whether you think this is a suitable sort of structure to use in that feedback document.
Yeah,
that's okay. But I mean, some of them, I, for instance, don't agree with the responses, but then we need to discuss that at some stage, I guess.
I think it's very hard to do these statements. And when I read them, I found them, I commented this earlier to April as well, I found them to be very general, and some of them almost sort of just, we have to say something. And I would like, if we are to make sort of response, I think it should be more content and more opinion in the response, or more openly saying, we will think more about it.
In some respects, the strategy part of the document is the response, because that's actually setting out the plans. But the difficulty is, it's like anything, when you know people spend a lot of time writing letters on it, they give us comments and feedback. We don't have a basis for conclusions in here, but we're trying to acknowledge in a way that we have heard your concerns and that you can see it reflected. So maybe maybe the feedback you're giving us now is that we have at least to acknowledge those. Maybe we don't need as many. We don't have to provide as detailed comments. We just let the statement speak for itself, or we have stronger comments, and I don't know what your preference is.
You said you had two documents. You would have two documents, one being the feedback statement, one the strategy. So how shall we divide our response between the two documents?
We actually think we should put them together. So April and I were talking about then maybe if they're put together in one document, it makes it much easier. You don't have to worry about an artificial divide. You can actually see the flow.
I'm not sure all of these responses are reflective of the board's opinion. Yeah. So, you know, for example, there's a statement in here on definition of them elements, and you make the statement, we think the current definition should be reviewed, but we don't think they're causing major difficulties today. I just find that one to be contrary to our experience on the LISI accounting project, IAS 37, equities, liabilities, you know, and the list goes on. So it's one thing, I guess, to, I agree we should have responses, but I think we should make sure that we're in agreement and behind these responses.
Okay, but that will be addressed once the next document.
Paul? I have one general comment and one specific one. Well, two general comments. One is I think you've done a great job in putting this all together from such diverse responses. My general comment is a question. Throughout the suggested responses, we say we. We believe, we, et cetera. Who, earlier in your paper, you say the board and the staff believe. Does we refer in the responses that we might say to the world, does that mean both the board and the staff agree with these things?
Can only be just the board.
It's the board alone?
Well, it should be. No?
I don't know. I'm curious.
It must be.
And so then that means we have to, okay, we have to pay a lot of attention to these things like Patrick just raised.
No, if you say the board agrees, then in terms of we, the board agrees with that.
Okay. My specific question is, and I've said before, I think on page 4 of paper 13, I do not agree that the conceptual framework is not part of mandatory IFRS. We have a requirement, not an option, that in the absence of an IFRS that addresses your specific question, you have no choice but to look to the conceptual framework. I don't know how that translates into non-mandatory. I do agree somewhere you make a statement that you can't, it's not transaction specific, and you cannot, it's not like a machine where you put in a transaction and out comes the accounting answer. But at the same time, you cannot close your eyes to it. It's not something that gathers dust on a shelf. It's a living, useful document. And our own standards say it is mandatory.
Would it be helpful, April, if we gave, for those of us who have got suggestions, gave them to you offline?
I think that would be helpful, Ian, and I just expand a little bit on what Alan said. In looking at the sort of the drafting of the feedback statement at the moment, it's structured so that we've got each of the sections, the comments and the responses, and then as a summing up, what the effect of that has been on our strategy. Which is outlined in paper 13B, so that it brings it more together and adds a bit more depth and specificity to the discussion. But yes, I think you're right, Ian. I think if we can take detailed comments offline, that would be great.
Rico?
I follow what this was the Ed and the April just said. I don't think it is necessary to have two documents when we finally print out something. I will expect that A can be used in next month's SEC meetings, I have no problem. But I will feel it much more appropriate to concise some of the comments and put together with the B together. And I personally feel it's too lengthy. You know. So put together as a single document.
Feedback and the agenda.
Yes.
Proposed agenda.
Just like a basis for those proposed.
Yes. Any other comments? Okay. Proceed to the next. Let me see. And we need to go through the questions. I don't think so. There are no further comments. I think we can continue with the next page.
Okay, so paper 13B, this is, at least at the start, in my view, I can't say staff because it's not collective from the staff, the way we should develop our technical program. And I guess there are two parts, and you've asked questions about those, about both of those. So if I go through the whole package first, and we'll just come back to the questions. The first is actually developing the technical program in terms of the most important part of the redesign of that is suggesting that what we'll do is develop a broader based research program, and that becomes our basically the seeding process for taking on standards level projects. And it's very important, I think, to have a broad based program where we do perhaps a better job at identifying and defining very carefully what the problem is that we're trying to fix. As I say in the paper, we're very good at producing solutions. Solution usually is a solution to a problem, and most of the difficulty we have is in agreeing what the problem is. And so I think a research phase will help that. We've suggested, and it's gone out in the due process handbook, that the phase of having, or the step of having a discussion paper, instead of being part of your standard setting process, because the current process is now, is we put something onto the agenda, having passed the advisory council, done a bit of consultation and so on. First step is discussion paper, then MD, and then final. The idea is to move the discussion paper back into the research phase, so we actually try to tease out and get more information first, and we can use that to inform you to make a proposal to take that to a standard setting level. Now, one very important aspect of that is there's no presumption that you, by having a discussion paper, that you are going to go on and develop a standard. Maybe that's where it stops, because it may be that all this research says we actually don't have a problem. So the idea of the research thing is to make sure that we, before we race off and try to solve a problem, we make sure we all agree that there is a problem with solving. So that's a fundamental issue. Part of that is in order to, by broadening the base, it's also important that we then link in and use other standard setters to help us with that. And the idea is to use our standard setters, the broader IFRS community, to help with researching and bringing information in so we can actually develop discussion papers. And it may be that we continue to use, as we have done, standard setters to develop research papers for us, and we can publish those and they become part of the input process. But having a very broad base is going to be very important. So that's the first, I guess, fundamental thing in terms of a switch in operations. I'll ask a question about that in a couple of minutes. So network of standards is important. The other work that we're doing is the trustees have asked us to look at research capability. And by doing that, it's quite interesting, the last couple of months, the number of academic institutions that have approached us to help actually provide us and run workshops and run seminars and so on topics that are interested to us, and including quite well-established research processes where they're saying, tell us what problems you'd like us to research. So there seems to be much more interest in having more of a link with us in terms of the academic community providing us with information. So we think it's going to be important for us to take advantage of that.
Is that a pro bono or is that a...
Yeah, it's there's no cost to us so far. It's, the academics always tell us how cheap they are. So
you know that.
Yeah, I'm happy with that too. The trustees have asked us to look at research capability. Doesn't mean that we establish 30 positions that are research positions. It just may mean that we provide sort of the centre, and then we actually have a network around us and use the institutions that actually exist. And I think that's going to be important as well, feeding into our research program. It's going to help us with post-mutation reviews. You'll see next month, and TARC is going to be presenting a paper on a review of literature, and I think it's going to be very important providing us with evidence. So the suggestion is that we end up changing our structure and our system slightly so that we actually have more information before we go to what I call a standards level project. So that's essentially the first half. Now, the second half is, well, what are we going to do? Now, there are some givens here, and that we are committed to doing post-implementation reviews. And so we don't have to ask whether or not we add those to our work program. We're going to do that. We do it around about 2 to 3 years after a standard. That's why when we start to talk about the technical program, there are some people may raise issues and say, well, you haven't mentioned goodwill or IFRS 3, for example. Well, that's already covered by the post-implementation review because that's going to be drawn into that one when we start that later this year. We are also committed to maintenance. And so all of the interpretation work and implementation work has been acknowledged by the trustees and by the board and the interpretations committee that we have to have a responsive process to that. And in the due process handbook, it reflects the fact that for maintenance, we don't have to go through a long process of seeking permission to do things. We need to be as responsive and ready to adapt to small, narrow scope issues as they come along to us. And I think essentially that's what we have been doing, but we're trying to be more transparent about that. What that leaves us with is our technical work plan, which is really the question of what are we going to work on? And I think that's where we want to spend most time, and I'm interested in feedback on project priorities. Now, if you turn to page 9 of 13B, the first set is conceptual framework. And I think there's been very strong support for us to do more in the framework. And what I'm recommending is that we restart our conceptual framework as a matter of priority. And that's aimed at public discussions again by the end of 2012. Now, I've suggested 4 chapters should be put together, as you'll see, and the way we operate is very important as well. But we should develop at least those 4 chapters and probably a 5th, which is the reporting entity. So the elements, so definitions of assets and liabilities and so on, a measurement chapter, presentation, which includes OCI, disclosure, which we should include interim financial reports, and perhaps after our discussion today, even the issue of transition, for example, I think is an appropriate thing in comparatives. And we've already done work, as I said, on reporting entity, and I think it's likely that we should review that and probably couple that into here. So that will give us 5 clear chapters. I don't think we should do these in sequence. I think we should do these together because it's very difficult to separate the implications of one chapter from another. And I think that's the most likely way that we'll get a cohesive framework together. So while it's a fairly big piece of work, the idea is to do the 5 chapters in one go. I think it's also important that we be the lead on this, and the proposal is that we don't operate this as a joint project with any particular standard setter. But it's also very important to emphasise that we are going to need the other standard setters quite deeply involved in this with helping us to get both the development and also the buy-in to the framework as well. The other thing which is a little bit different from the way the framework's been operated previously is they used to have a little card that said you're not allowed to peek ahead. I think we ought to peek ahead. And I've suggested that as we develop the framework that we need to get staff who are involved in some of our more problematic projects. By problematic, I mean the challenging issues. Things like emission trading schemes and the definition of a liability. That's got to have. We've got. If our framework doesn't help us solve that problem, then it's not a very good framework. So we should be using those types of issues as tests against the framework. I mentioned leasing, for example, and definition of an asset. And there's quite a range in there. ICE 37 is an interesting one because that's the liability and the measurement aspects of it. So we ought to take these quite interesting issues and make sure that the team, when it's put together, both has a core conceptual framework team, but it's also grounded in the types of issues that the standard setting problems we have to solve. So that's quite a big chunk, the conceptual framework. But then proposing that we go have to state quite clearly, none of these are proposals to go straight to the standard. We still have to go through our proper due process of putting proposals together. However, I'm suggesting that the likely pathway we should follow is there are three projects that I think that we should start working on immediately in terms of a research program with a view to, in a very short term, putting that on the standards level project. And it's likely that they would go straight to an ED. That's what I anticipate. Mayor Agriculture and their potential amendments in relation to bearer crops and regulated activities, even, as I emphasise in the paper, either to develop requirements or to get to an agreement that they don't qualify and we don't need requirements. But we should put this one to bed one way or the other.
Isn't it linked to the elements in the conceptual framework? There's so many. Why did we stumble on rent regulated? Because after all the good work which has been done, then we found out that we were not sure whether they would be compliant with the assets on liabilities and the conceptual framework. So how can you hope that we'll be able to complete this discussion here without having done further work on the conceptual framework?
Well, that's going to be a challenge, but what I don't want to get in a situation is if the framework is holding us up on actually working on standards level projects. And I may make the point in there that rate regulated activities is an interesting one to test against both asset and liability, but we have an issue at the moment with some very major jurisdictions, one that's actually deferred the application of IFRSs for a particular sector, and I think they want some answers in the shorter term.
There are two ways.
Are we opening up the discussion now, are you continuing your? Why don't you continue your introduction down? Can fire up.
So, agricultural rate regulated and an issue to do with equity method and separate financial statements, and just some clarifications on how you present information in the separate financial statements that we've been asked to look at. Then the next level of projects. That I think are priority are emission trading schemes. We've already done a lot of work on that. My personal view is I anticipate that will probably lead to a discussion paper, but it's something that we probably ought to reinvigorate, because there are a lot of jurisdictions have got emission trading schemes in place or are doing work on this particular issue as well. Business combinations under common control, we added that to the agenda in December 2007 and haven't done any work on it really. Others have done a bit. And again, we should probably start to reinvigorate that one. And I anticipate that likely to be a discussion paper. This sounds quite busy. So I have in here a small section that talks about a period of calm, because, you know, five chapters of a framework and three standards level projects, possibly, and two others, that sounds busy. But agriculture is very narrow for a narrow group of jurisdictions or entities. And rate regulated is a very specific, industry-specific issue, and people want answers to those. Emission trading schemes and BizCom under common control are quite generic, but I don't think we're going to be ready to jump straight to a standard that quickly. So getting the work going and actually thinking about discussion paper, I don't think creates any sense of angst out there that we're going to all of a sudden turn everything upside down with those two projects. So I actually think it is a relatively considered response to some concerns and of topics that have perhaps been overlooked in the past, without upsetting anything too much. And then I've also suggested I guess seven research topics that we ought to undertake. And again, just to reflect back, the idea of a research agenda is a relatively low threshold to get onto it. It shouldn't take much for us to consider that this is something worth thinking about. We'll go back to the Advisory Council and to IFAS and others, show them what work we're doing. If they tell us it's a complete waste of time, then perhaps we should listen to that. But I'm suggesting that we start work on some other research topics, and they're listed from pages 15 and on. Discount rates, that's looking at whether or not there are ways that we can improve consistency or not. The equity method of accounting. The extracted activities is an interesting one, because we already have a discussion paper prepared by standard setters. I'm concerned that we don't want to rush too quickly with that. It has the same characteristics as insurance, in that there are some quite embedded practices in there among the reporting entities. And of course the users and the panelists are used to receiving particular types of information. We've also been told that the whole thing of R&D and intangible assets, I've told people a lot that I don't see much difference between digging a hole in the ground to find some oil and pouring money into finding compounds for medical research. There are some quite similar characteristics to those. And we should at least examine whether or not it would be better in the longer term to solve all of those issues rather than to take one sector and isolate it and solve that. Financial instruments are with characteristics of equity. I hate that title. That's a difficult one. I don't think we can do much on that until we've actually got the framework solved. There's no point defining equity in the framework and at the same time going on a standards level project as well. But we should still identify and find out what instruments are causing us problems today under IS32, because that will help feed into that project as well. And then foreign currency translation, amendments to IS37 liabilities, and financial reporting in hyperinflation economies, although we've been asked to have a look at that, not just hyperinflation, but high inflation, because we've got jurisdictions with inflation 20 to 40%. They don't meet IS29, but they're concerned that the financial statements are misleading because of that. And I think there are some jurisdictions out there that are willing to do the work with us. And the idea is to signal that those projects are things that we're interested in looking at potentially and perhaps putting some board time to over the next 3 years or so. Then you get to the next layer of topics, income taxes, post-employment benefits and share-based payments. Even though they're issues that we're aware of that people want us to do some work on, I think we should give a signal that we ought to encourage people to do some work on it, but we're not likely to take that to the board within the next 3 years or so. And we'd feed that into the next three-year cycle when we do the review. And the reason for encouraging that is that if we say to people, do nothing, then in 3 years' time we'll be no further advanced. But if the risk that people take is that they're going to do the work, but we're not promising to look at anything at all, at least in the short to medium term, reflect on that later on. And I think it's important that we signal what we are interested in and what we are interested in the longer term, but just not able to address as well. There are a couple of other things. Islamic or Sharia compliant transactions. I don't think this board has got particular expertise in it, and it would be helpful perhaps set up a working group to have a look at that. And we could get some education sessions, for example, in the medium term. So not everything's about setting up standards, but some things are about learning more information. I think that's why a broader research sort of program, I think, is quite helpful for that. The other small thing is, although it's probably very important, is disclosure. Also recommending that, because we're looking at disclosure in the framework, and it might take us a couple of years to get to a point where we've got something more definitive coming out of that, people are still struggling with disclosure under today's requirements. And I think from the feedback we had at the Advisory Council, and some sessions we've been to, there are some preparers are doing a very good job of actually addressing disclosure overload, as they call it, and doing a good job of presentation within the current framework. And it would be good for us to get together an international forum where we share the experiences those preparers have got and get the regulators, the auditors, and us and some preparers together to see if there are some ways that we can improve disclosure within the current framework without having to change any standards. Because it's quite clear from the feedback we've had, there are no quick wins in the disclosure battle at all, with the standards at least. So I don't know if that's sort of a general overview. If you want to discuss any of the particular projects or the suggestions before we come back to the questions for you.
Alan, we open the floor now, but one question. What do you mean by aiming to have public discussions before the end of 2012 on this conceptual framework?
Have a board paper come to this board by 2012, by the end of this year.
What?
Well,
a new conceptual framework?
No, not a new conceptual framework. some issues, for example, the direction of project.
Project plan
that you can come to the board. We've got some issues that the staff may be seeking direction on from the board, and we start to discuss with the public.
Confused as to what that might mean. Everybody wants to talk. Let's start with John.
Thank you. The research stuff. In order to initiate a project, and assuming the way you were talking about it, other standard setters may be taking the lead, is that something that formally comes on our agenda, or Is it something we simply identify and let someone start and develop? Is that?
I think it's a matter of the board obviously has it's your work plan in a sense. So I think it's appropriate for us to, if we're going to put something onto that work plan, that we do it through some sort of forum like this, yeah, through a board meeting. And essentially that's it. But it's the difference is that when you get to a standards level project, we will consult with the advisory council,
okay, that's the OC, and so on.
Whereas it's a much lower threshold to get onto that for this. You know, we come along and say, look, we've been approached by these people. Do you want to do some work on it? Or do you want us to do some work on it? It's not you, but usually the staff.
Okay.
Thank you, Hans. I think, Alan, thank you for the comprehensive. You did not even take a breath and you spoke such eloquence. Question for you. You put agriculture rate regulated and equity method into the short-term projects, and I think I wanted to get your thoughts on it. Did I hear you correctly? You said that probably we can move to the standard quickly. That means we don't need an exposure draft on it and go to the standard?
No, sorry. It was moving to an exposure draft is the next document.
Moving to an exposure draft.
Okay. What all I'm trying to give a signal is saying is that
a lot of work has been done already.
Yeah, we've done. There's been a lot of work. Let's, if we start to get this going within the organisation, what's the most likely thing is, look, we've done enough to go straight to an ED here.
Okay.
I think that's
I completely agree with you. I think of the three, my personal view is that we should be, I think agricultural and equity method in separate financial statements would be the, perhaps the least controversial compared to rate regulated. We need to be realistically thinking about the rate regulated. I appreciate the board was divided. So was the constituents, if I remember right. We had 50-50 in terms of feedback, supporting and not supporting the view. So I agree with you, but I'm a little worried about the short-term nature that we are thinking. Maybe we have been a little bit too optimistic on the rate regulator, but that's the comment I want to make.
That is certainly going to be the toughest one.
Otherwise, agriculture, and I agree with you, equity should fly too soon. And do you, in your thinking, did you make any plan about the period, the relative period of calm with a couple of exposure drafts out for comment? Is that the time you want to squeeze in these things? Like, let's say the revenue is done, the financial instruments will be out for exposure draft. Is that the timing? Because I didn't see any timing specifically for these. Like your conceptual framework, you said you want to bring to the board by 2012. When do you plan to bring these? Because it's, as you know, it's a lot of interest to some constituents.
No, we haven't done enough work internally to work out a proper timetable. And I just make the point as well, people asked us for a period of calm. We didn't give very good definitions of what they mean by that, because there's a difference between having lots of exposure drafts out there that they have to comment on, as opposed to a lot of standards finishing at the same time, they've got to change their systems. And for some people, calm means don't change my accounting. For other people, calm means stop putting out the EDs. So it's different things to different people.
Well, but I suppose it's mostly don't force us to change
the systems. Yeah. Which is why what's proposed here, framework and then two narrow scope ones, is still, I think, preserves that relative calm.
Yeah. Because the narrow scope ones won't force everybody to change their systems. And if they have to change their systems, they will be very glad to do so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I like this. I think it's very good, and it's of course some fine-tuning to do, but I think we're really, really doing this in a good way. As soon as we put something on a list like this, some people will start to ask for the time schedule, and I think we need to think through rather much in detail on how we answer that type of questions. Even if it's not giving any proper answer, I think it is very important. This with working with others to do research, I think that's excellent. But we should be aware of that. That must be a board involvement, a staff involvement in this. And we have had some cases, I was involved in one, where a certain area promised to do the studies, and they went straight ahead to write a standard. It was impossible, really, to get them off it. I think we must set out very clear working procedures, and we must have resources to be able to do this.
Yeah, I think, just on that one, you know, I was involved on the other side doing some projects for pensions and tax. And there was no ISB involvement. I think the intention, if I've got it right from Alan, going forward is there would always be ISB involvement, just at a staff level. But
To prevent people working and then at the end getting the message, thank you, but no thank you.
Exactly. And that, and I liked what you talked about, this with problem-oriented starting. And I mean, we have not been very good on that. And I think one way of being more precise on this is that before we go into a formal project phase, we should make a public consultation. We should describe the project, the problem, and allow people, perhaps not during 120 days, but 30 or 45 days or something, to give us information. That forces us to do a proper document of what we're really trying to do, and people cannot come afterwards. We have a couple of projects where we've been rather unprecise on the objectives of the project. So I think we should really think through if we should have a public consultation as part of the agenda decision.
Daryl.
Again, also fairly supportive of where the document's going. The one concern I have is rate regulated, and I think a couple of people have brought it up. I think it's twofold. It's the complexity of the rate regulated, along with the urgency of trying to develop a solution. And the two options that you've given in the paper are that we either develop a full IFRS or come to the conclusion that we don't need an IFRS. And I just wondered if you thought about the idea of perhaps having a placeholder like we had with IFRS 4 and IFRS 6, just to kind of take some of the urgency or the sting out of the issue.
Sort of a grandfathering, allowing people to continue to use existing accounting until we...
And I think it's particularly important because some of the, it's a new jurisdiction in one case and another potential new jurisdiction that have got an existing practice and under IFRS don't know what they would do.
Well, I think it's a good idea to
knowing for sure that one of those potential new users of IFRS would grandfather it anyway.
Potentially.
No, not potentially, sure. Leo.
It's a very good paper, and I like it very much. It seems very much looks like a written document written by a CEO, you know, carefully thinking how to implement it. I have four areas of comments. First of all, on conceptual framework, I think one thing we should keep in mind, I see two points from me, they are closely related. First one is whether we want to extend the length of the current documents or not. Because previously, you know, we work with FSB. We have totally different documents. Ours very thin, and the FSB's relatively longer. They have we have a problem how to work together and find a common ground. But now we are working ourselves. Then one question for us, whether we basically want to revise our conceptual framework roughly the same size or extend it a little bit, or want to double size, even triple size. And secondly, I personally still feel current conceptual framework basically sound. So I personally feel the future efforts is some type of amendment rather than say that we will have totally different conceptual framework. So this is my first point on conceptual framework. Second, on presentation and disclosure, I will feel we should have two layers. One, that it will be in the conceptual framework at high level issues. And then others, maybe possibly in standard setting level. Particularly, presentation will already have separate standards. And in terms of disclosure, I would expect we may possibly need, I'm not sure, have a separate standard of disclosure, which is not at high, such a high level in the conceptual framework. I'm not sure. And certainly, on regulatory activities, I shared some of the concern from the board members. I will expect only two scenarios will be a quick project. That is, we deny. Secondly, we require disclosure. That's all. If we intend to finalize a standard, I don't expect will be short term. And Alan, you mentioned that, you know, some of the jurisdictions enter into the board and they are not willing to. But I would say the opposite. So many countries enter into IFRS, they already eliminate their current practice, which may basically in line with current standards in the United States. We should not hurt them. You know, they already do the right things. We say, oh, you should change back. That's it. So this is the third one. The fourth one, I will suggest we escalate Islam financing into the second tier. That is among emission trading and another one is which one?
There are many.
First one, three projects.
Second one is combination.
The reason is, you know, we have a very big constituencies. They are moving to us, towards us. And in Asia, and basically in Asia and the Arab world. And I don't expect we will have a big changes to our standards. But they cry again and again. So I will feel we'll escalate this project into that tier will be much more concrete than say we just form a consultative committee. And so that's it. All what I want to suggest.
Paul? I've got 2 points. It's a wonderful analysis of our agenda consultation. My first point relates to the conceptual framework. It is the conceptual framework for financial reporting. What's lacking in the framework at the moment is a definition of financial reporting. Indeed, there's a footnote that says we haven't defined it. The four projects that you've identified, certainly two of them, the elements of financial statements, I think measurement, are pretty clearly financial statements. I'm not sure whether the presentation component would go beyond financial statements. Probably the disclosure, again, is financial statements. Are we at some point, and this relates to our mission, you know, what's the role of the IASB? Is our framework, at least in as you contemplate the first phase of getting things done, will that focus only on financial statements? That's my first of two questions.
That is not enough.
Yeah. Oh, it's plenty. Yeah, let me give you a few examples. We have already issued guidance on management discussion and analysis, management commentary. That's clearly outside the financial statements. You have a project on your list of, pretty high on your research list on extractive industries. It's quite likely that we will end up with, as part of that project, disclosures of reserve quantities, maybe reserve values, various other kinds of information that often is presented outside of financial statements. Hillary Eastman, I see her sitting there, Hillary's investor outreach efforts have indicated that investors would like us to actually define some ratios and some subtotals because while everybody uses the term EBITDA, there's a wide variety of ways that's calculated. Are we, in the short term, are we going to get into any of this, Alan?
The two questions are, I think currently our framework, it focuses on financial reporting. We acknowledged when we developed management commentary that management commentary was within the bounds of financial reporting, but we didn't know where the boundary ended. Yeah. So we know it's slightly beyond that, we're not quite sure where. My personal view is I always anticipated when you have a presentation project, conceptual framework, trying to help the board decide whether it should be reported on the face, to use the old term, in the notes or in management commentary, is an important decision. And what factors should you take into account in making that decision? So I think it's very hard for us to avoid thinking more broadly than just financial statements, whereas the financial IFRSs themselves then tell you how to recognise, measure, and what information within the financial statement parts of it. And as you see, we've got management commentary guidance that deals with that other part of it. So we already acknowledge within the IFRS world the existence of this management commentary in other parts of the financial reports. So the scope of this framework today is financial reports. I don't see that changing. And on the second issue about other items such as EBIT and EBITDA and so on, that's clearly something that within the presentation of disclosure and dealing with non-GAAP numbers, as we call them today often, that's clearly something we have to think about. And we already addressed that now. Management commentary says you have to reconcile back to GAAP numbers or IFRS numbers. So thinking about different ways of summing up and presenting, I can't see how we can avoid this.
Yeah, I agree. I think the only reason they're non-GAAP is because we don't have a line in one of our IFRSs that says how to do it. My second question is more specific. We divided our agenda consultation into two groups of constituents, one users and two everybody else. And there was wide diversity in what they told us about what were their high priority projects. But number one, among the highest priorities of the two groups was financial statement presentation. We had a project on our agenda, it was well along, but set aside, I mean a standards level project, set aside. Am I correct in looking and reading what you've put together that project will continue to be set aside probably for some years, and you may disagree with that, until the presentation piece of the framework is done?
Okay. If I rewrote the paper today, I would have, just as I've talked about within the framework, some of the things like rate regulated would be helped. I would have added some information or comments about financial statement presentation project. My personal view is that some of the principles that we develop in that project are actually quite appropriate at framework level because they tell us about aggregation, disaggregation, and so on. The difficult part of the disclosure and presentation chapters of the framework is that there will be a point at which we then say, right, now there are implications at the standards level. And I suspect that once we get the framework side sorted out, we'll very quickly move to bringing in some aspects of financial statement presentation. So I would have thought, you know, if you're developing a project on a conceptual framework, the first thing you do is get the FSP stuff out, and that's part of your input into developing that framework chapter.
That is a bit worrisome. Couldn't that take very long? Also, when everybody's asked us to do something about OCI, that is perhaps something that you could deal with only in the conceptual framework by laying out the basic principles behind OCI.
But a lot of the work and thinking has been done in FSP on even things like OCI, for example, and the idea of presenting as something like an income statement balance sheet based on, say, operating financing and investing activities and things. And so there is a lot of work that's been done. It's actually good input, and it means that we can pick up some of the pieces, but it may not necessarily be a full financial state presentation project, but some of those pieces might fit into our conceptual framework.
Yeah, but the conceptual framework will remain brief. I think we should have made it into a 150-page document. Try to keep it brief, otherwise it ceases to be a conceptual framework. And obviously we cannot make that inclusive of a sort of a financial presentation standard. To wait with that work until the conceptual framework is done completely, we might want to have some parallel processes. We have to think about that a little bit.
At the moment, we haven't got anything in our framework about essentially what the shape of an income statement or balance sheet.
There is no chapter on presentation. No. There is no chapter on disclosure here.
But I think the pause point is that there are some parts of financial statement presentation thinking that might lend themselves to be used to develop those chapters. They're not huge chapters, but you take some of the core principles out of the FSP work, and they may be very helpful for us.
Yes, that's part of my point. I absolutely agree. That could inform all the work we did could inform the framework piece, but we also don't want to take years and years to deal with the standards level piece.
I think you have a very good point there, especially if both users and the carers and others had that on the top of their list.
I thought preparers didn't want it, users did.
Maybe I'm wrong. I thought they both.
I thought they were
active. I think OCI was at the top of
the
list.
The rest
of everybody's paid.
I did agree with the assessment test. OCI were clearly on the top, but not a project, not a standard level project on presentation. It was not shared. And we saw multiple. It was not widely shared.
It was for analysts.
It was the analyst. It was number one on the analyst.
Okay, but maybe not all. I mean, there are two groups. I also think it's a very good paper, and I would be happy to answer yes to the four questions, but maybe with some reservations for question two about the conceptual framework. Maybe I don't understand exactly what you explained, but it seems to me you want to bring the four phases together and not in sequence. Which to me is a bit inconsistent with the urgency to have an answer to the OCI situation, OCI problem, and disclosures, which seems, according to what I read in the consultation, that people want a quick solution, a relatively quick solution to the excess disclosure and to the lack of framework for disclosures. They want a solution on OCI. I didn't feel there was so much urgency put on elements of measurement in the responses. And furthermore, I don't understand why the reporting entity chapter is dealt with separately. It's the most advanced piece of work, and we stopped it because we didn't have time, but we may not need that much effort to complete that part. So why not do it first? Let's finish what we have nearly finished, because it's a useful improvement to the framework, and then let's continue with the four other phases, but maybe in sequence. As we did first, we did have a sequence. And clearly there is a demand to complete presentation, OCI, disclosures, much more than elements of measurement.
Okay, no, they're fair points in terms of, I think the message I'm trying to get across is that we should not do the chapters in isolation, and we should not deliberately try to sequence them, and that we should do this as one package if we can. If we complete some of the chapters earlier, there should be nothing that stops us completing, for example, the disclosure or presentation ahead of the elements. But most of the chapters are related to each other.
I'm very worried that we can have been involved for a number of years on elements of measurement. I know that it is difficult. It may hold up the completion of other ones which are possibly easier to complete. So if we want to keep all the things together, we may never make any progress because the two other ones are difficult ones. About the disclosure, etc., you mentioned or suggested that transition could be part of that. I would say transition and comparability of financial information. The discussion we had earlier today was more about comparability of financial statements over time than transition. So let's maybe acknowledge this point, that it's important that the framework is clear about the objective of comparability over time and how to achieve it. And maybe that would introduce a specific project on transition, I don't know, but to me it goes together with presentation. What is the purpose of financial statements, presentation, disclosures, comparability?
Comparability is in the qualitative characteristics, isn't it?
Yeah, it is, but we do not explain clearly what we mean in practice. It's an objective, but when we deal with how many years have to be restated, when do we do the transition, which period is first affected, I think that is not clear in the framework. So it's a standard level project or conceptual level, I don't know exactly, but I think it's part of the picture.
I highly appreciate your paper, especially about conceptual framework. You mentioned that you will cease the formal joint project style. And also, you said you do five chapters in one go. And also, you said that strategically, you are going to invite other national standard setters to join. of course, it's not a joint project. So that will make our progress of the conceptual framework work be much quicker than everybody thought. Many people say if we tackle this, it may take 10 years, but I think if we did it in this way, I think we can come to conclusion much earlier than the current way of proceeding the project. Having said that, suppose we complete the conceptual framework within, say, 5 years, within the first term of our chairman.
So within 4 years.
4 years. Suppose we could do it. So I just want to know, how do you going to change each individual standard in line with the new conceptual framework? Because we are going to tackle the definition of assets, we're going to tackle the new measurement, and also OCI. Perhaps OCI would be one of the, perhaps could be one of the easiest way, but without having the measurement, then OCI means something different. So those are the most difficult areas, so I would like to hear your observation. That is the first point. And second point, I appreciate that you made a list of priority of each individual project, and actually this is the one many constituents want to have. And actually, I nearly, almost I can agree with your list of priority. However, showing the list is sometimes dangerous because some people may think that our proposal has been neglected or was not prioritized. So that is one of the dangerous point. But I would think after reading your paper, I didn't take it like I said. Rather, you provided that your view that we are going to increase our capacity to tackle those issues in cooperation with national standard setter and also academic areas. So I take your paper, we are open to discuss, and also we are open to have a cooperation from other jurisdictions. So I just want to confirm my observation is correct. And one more point, that's a specific issue. In the paragraph 49 and 50, you have a list of research, and this includes foreign currency translation, which was raised by Korean accounting standard. And I agree we should ask them to do some work, and it could be some progress. I hope we can see some progress. Just can I ask, does it contain functional currency issue? Or also, does it contain OCI recycle issue in the foreign currency transaction? Just that this is specific question.
Okay, so three quick responses. When we produce the new framework in a timely manner, then the question will be, how does it affect other standards? We have a three-yearly technical review of our program, and if people have got major issues, they should raise them then. I don't think there's any presumption that a change in the framework will automatically generate a change in the standard. I'll make one slight qualification on that. I could anticipate that we get some disclosure, specific work coming out of the disclosure disclosure chapter, but I think that's a little bit different. But I don't see any, there's no automatic change to a standard as a result of a change in the framework. Secondly, we are open, I think, as I mentioned, to other topics that people come to us. We'll bring them back to the board and ask if you want us to do some work on that, and at least do some research on it. You know, and it may be informally, when people come to us, that the staff will simply respond initially and see whether or not there's a problem worth bringing to the board. The other thing that the board also needs to do is make sure that it doesn't fill its technical program up to the point that it has no capacity to deal with urgent issues as they come to it. So there will always be, hopefully, enough capacity. So if there is a major issue or a problem, then the monitoring board has the power to refer issues to us. We always have the capacity to deal with those. And the last thing on functional currency, I'd ask the team to ask if that's a problem. In other words, as part of the research, what are the issues in foreign currency? Is functional currency an issue? We'd gather some information. You go and look at the requests we had from the Interpretations Committee and go out, talk to national standard setters, go to different jurisdictions, gather information, find out how big a problem it is.
Thanks, Hans. I just very quickly would like to echo others that before me acknowledge the excellence of the papers and the tremendous summary prepared by the staff. I think facilitates very much my analysis of the issue. I just would like to make one remark on our expectations regarding the research aspect. And I do agree working with third parties will boost our capacity to provide a quicker response to many aspects. But I do believe researching or using research from universities, as Alan mentioned in his opening remarks, or national standard setters, we should bear in mind, or we should at least establish clearly what are the minimum outcomes that we need from those research papers. This is very important, not to frustrate the third parties that are working with us, and not to frustrate ourselves as well in building up this relationship with them. So those parameters or minimum requirements, I think they are very important.
I think that's right, and it was partly what Jan was saying as well, I think. But I think we've also got to be aware that we won't always get successful with research. We will have projects where we won't get...
Yeah, no, I'm not assuming all research papers will successfully turn into a standard. This is the second level. I think the research itself, how it's structured, framed, I think there are aspects such as, you know, during the research process, we expect them to gather users' perspectives. So this should be, must be in the research result, or experience evidences from various countries, not that region or that country in particular. So things like that, I think it would provide a better response for us.
Different points. I'd like to comment on three of the projects that are mentioned here. The first is disclosure, and the way it's teed up here is largely as part of the framework, although Anna's mentioned once or twice that there might be a standards level follow-on. And so to my mind, the standards level follow-on ought to probably come fairly quickly, or we ought to assess fairly quickly whether we need the follow-on. I think that's the certainly what I've heard in the outreach on this. Secondly, on extractive activities, I'd like to remind the board that Daryl already mentioned IFRS 6. It's one of the two standards that explicitly says that people don't have to give relevant and reliable information. So I think when we're assessing timelines, we ought to think about how long we ought to leave that kind of statement in place. And the third is a project or a potential research activity that I would take off the list, which is discount rates. And my worry is that that's going to unjustified expectations. I think I could tell you by the end of today why there are differences between the standards in what they say about discount rates, and it's because they have different objectives. So I don't see any realistic prospect that we'll be able to eliminate that diversity just by looking at discount rates. So I think it would be better to avoid making statements that might suggest we will be able to deal with that in the short term.
Okay, well, I hear general support. It was a very good paper with a very clear outline and which clearly shows the path forward. So thank you, Alan, for that very good work. I think we should also thank our constituents for giving us a very clear message. The message was pretty much coherent. And sometimes we are being sent all over the place here. The message was very clear. So I think
we'll get some questions.
do. Oh, wait, I'm looking at the hat. We start voting again.
You could actually do, I'm fitting with the very last page. But the sense I've heard is you, I think you could probably ask them the bulk. Anybody object?
No objection.
No objection.
Can we just nod in agreement on the questions together? Yeah? Okay. I mean, there were some concrete suggestions that you can use in the very many stages that we will follow. Okay, good. Thanks. I propose we have a short break till 2:05.
I had a